We're glad you're joining us here at Common Thread Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. If you missed last week's live stream, it was a combination of lesson and community meeting, and it was kind of an important week for our community. So if you missed and you think of yourself as part of the community, you really should catch up online. I didn't say these words last week, but I was talking about the gap between our aspirations and our actuality. We want to be a racially safe and racially diverse community. We want to be able to handle difficult things openly and wisely. We want to be good at knowing one another's stories, accepting one another, and joining one another in oneness that is not sameness. We want to do better around racial division, all kinds of divisions. But what we want and what we are actually able to do last week showed us, there's a gap. There's a gap between our aspirations and our actuality. Well, it turns out that's kind of an American thing. As a nation, we are a pretty aspirational bunch. We always have been. Our founding documents aspire to lofty, lofty ideals. We have deep aspirations for economic and social systems that give mobility to everyone. That's kind of an American ideal. We see ourselves as a nation where everyone who works hard can rise above their station. We also aspire to equality before the law, that poor and wealthy both, weak and powerful alike, face equal treatment under the law. We also aspire to liberty, that no person, no institution has undue control over anybody else. We aspire to diversity and unity. It's right there on our money, e pluribus unum. We want to believe about ourselves that all of us have equal standing as real Americans. And also, we like to think of ourselves as can-do pragmatists, that we're willing to let go of rigid set ways and rigid ideology so that we can freely innovate and we can try new things. Well, in historical terms, our American aspirations have been bold. And that's made the American experiment an exceedingly bright spot in human history, a bright spot on the planet, powerfully inspiring many, many people. But that being said, there has always been a gap between our aspirations and our actuality. Social mobility doesn't happen for everybody who works hard. Studies show that even less so since the 1980s. Everybody doesn't get equal treatment before the law. You've seen that. It's different for rich and for poor. We surely haven't been free of rigid ideology lately. Goodness sakes. Even religious liberty, one of our core ideals, hasn't always been the same for Jewish people, Catholic people, Muslim people. No generation has ever fully achieved our American aspirations. But that we aspire, that's what brings us back again and again and again to revisiting and refining to doing better. So, with that as a lens for looking, let's reimagine what's happening in the historical moment that we are in together right now. Now, before we do, that word, aspire, it seems like such a gentle word, doesn't it? Kind of benign. What a tender word. How unassuming. But in fact, to aspire greatly is to invite upending. To aspire greatly is to invite so much change that it can actually feel traumatic. And that has been the American way. When we aspire to e pluribus unum, when we aspire to out of many becoming one, we believe that about ourselves, but then the virus hits, and it highlights how fundamentally two we really are and not one. The virus is going very differently for salaried workers and for hourly workers. It's going very differently for people of color and for white people. Again, the gap between our aspirations and our actuality. And when that happens, it gets decidedly ungentle. We get all worked up because it should be equal. It should be the same. That is our aspiration. Same thing with social mobility. The likelihood that someone born poor can work hard and improve their station is in decline. Policies with unintended consequences have put American mobility down since at least the 1970s, really taking a root in the 80s. So that's a lot of the energy behind the tumult that we see in the swing states right now. And again, when our actuality doesn't match our aspirations, it has become decidedly ungentle. Because deep inside of us, we should be able to work hard and get ahead. Aspirations do that. And when they do, it's often not a gentle process. So when we feel worked up, and when we feel other people feeling worked up, that may be a worked up that we really want. Aspirations impregnate a new possibility. A dream gets inside of us. It should be the same for black and white. It should be the same for rich and poor. It should be the same for a worker in Raleigh and a worker in Cleveland. It should be. Our aspirations impregnate us with possibility. And when should isn't, all of the tension, all of the pain that we feel, we could see that as birth pangs. Our aspirations, getting birthed into being, is a tumultuous process, decidedly ungentle. So, our nation is pretty worked up these days. Last week we saw even our own community pretty worked up. And here's Crazy Doug saying, hey folks, this could be a good thing. Hey, point of pain is not to get out of pain. The point of pain is get out of pain, what we need to get out of pain. Something new being born. And giving birth to something new, it just is difficult. This is what aspirations being born looks like. It's hard. It's painful. We're shaking off old ways of thinking, old habits, old norms. Things that were once okay and seemingly collectively acceptable are no longer okay, no longer acceptable. And going through that process, it is hard. Something new is being born. But good for us. We aspire to a world in which we are equal, in which we are one, in which we all can do better if we work hard, in which all of us do have equal access and equal treatment. And that's true in a nation, and it's true in our community. It's true at your house, your job, your school. Aspirations being born into being is an uncomfortable process. When growth is happening, it is uncomfortable. So a lesson. Getting comfortable with being uncomfortable is a lesson about inviting us to stay with the process of something new, our aspirations being born. We could look at this kind of uncomfortable growth that we're going through right now as a study in one of Jesus' important teachings. If we are faithful with a little, he said, then we will be given more. So think about it this way. If we don't back away from the discomfort of birth pangs, if we don't allow our fear brain instincts to pull us back from growth moments, to get us back to that comfortable feeling, that stasis, that inner equilibrium we talked about. But if instead we hang in there until birth happens, when that does happen, we get a little bit bigger inside. The community around us gets a little bit bigger. We become a little more capable of doing a little bit more. And our world becomes a little bit more capable of supporting new life being born all around us. And then, when we've gotten more, we can do more, and then the cycle begins to repeat itself. Faithful with little, we are given more. That's the invitation of this lesson. That's the invitation of this moment in history. Getting comfortable being uncomfortable. Find the divine invitation in our discomfort. Don't bail out. Don't back away. Learn what there is to learn. See what there is to see. Take up whatever invitation to growth discomfort offers us. Be faithful with a little bit, a here, now, small, doable little bit. And do that over time, and then we are given more and more and more. And so, in our nation, and in Wake County, and at your job or school or neighborhood, in our own spiritual community, this moment is inviting us to give birth to a new way of being, a way that better reflects our aspirations for oneness that is not sameness, a way of being that better reflects a bigger version of we. It's a new kind of life, a new way of living that we want. But unlike birthing babies, we can actually back away from this invitation to give birth. When Denise was delivering Haven, our firstborn, she said this. I thought she was joking when she said it, but she was actually on her face. She was dead serious. Somewhere around transition, which is the most painful part of the whole process, she said, "Oh, I have just got to take a break. Let's stop for a little while. We'll finish this up later." But here's the thing. We can actually do that when we're giving birth to aspirations. Can't do it when you're giving birth to babies, but we can back away from our aspiration birth process. So, at this moment, our national aspirations and the aspirations of our own spiritual community are pretty much aligned. A bigger version of oneness. Everybody included. Included in opportunity and access and respect. Everyone given a voice. Health outcomes that are good for everyone. I mentioned last week that we're hearing this phrase a lot these days. We're in this together, and yes, we're in quarantine together, and yes, we're facing economic troubles together, but more deeply, the problems that we all face, our economy, our virus, race, Me Too, economic disparities, equal access, disrespect, polarization, these are problems that can only be solved when we work together. The uncomfortable that we are facing nationally, the uncomfortable that we are facing as a community, can be, if we allow it, an invitation to give birth to a bigger version of us and a much smaller version of them, all working together on the troubles of everyone. Because when we stand back and look at the bigger truth, them is us. Us versus them is really an illusion. And transcending that illusion in everyday life, that could be what is being born in these very ungentle times. So let me give a little bit of texture about what these oneness birth pangs might be looking like and what might be driving them. In 1970, a study was done by a professor at Oxford. His last name is Taj Fell. You can Google him, T-A-J-F-E-L. Well, he was studying the brain's adversary-ally instinct that we've been looking at. And he was testing the hypothesis that us and them are hardwired structures, hardwired biases in our heads, that they are part of our internal evolutionary brain architecture. So to test that hypothesis, he gathered 64 teenage schoolboys to do what he thought would be the baseline experiment. He created a scenario that was so absurd in his mind that he thought nobody would possibly succumb to the us-them brain bias. It would serve, again, as a baseline. But no, that's not what happened. In the experiment, he showed all the boys dots on a page, and he asked them to guess how many dots were there. And then he told them that he was testing visual acuity, but he wasn't. What he did was randomly create two groups, an us group and a them group. with no basis in how they actually did, guessing the number of dots. He just called them high and low visual acuity groups. Then he thanked the boys and it appeared that it was over. But almost, apparently, as an afterthought, he said, well, hey, since you're here, I'd like to run another experiment. You've gone to all the trouble to get you here. This experiment is about how money gets allocated. Would you help me out? And since that experiment also needs a control group, and since we're already divided into two groups, let's divide up as along lines of visual acuity. That's as good a way as any. And then he set up the real experiment, which was allocating small amounts of real money. So again, 64 boys, they already knew each other from coming from the same school, divided completely arbitrarily, again, just trying to establish a baseline when us and them does not influence people. But in this instance, it did. The boys overwhelmingly gave more money to their team from the previous experiment. If they were low acuity boys, they gave the low acuity boys more. High acuity, same thing. The professor set up the dividing process so that each team would actually get more money if they divided the money fairly. But they didn't divide the money fairly. The boys were more interested in the other. Again, did I mention completely arbitrary? They were more interested in the other team doing badly than they were in their own team doing well. Well, it turns out what is hardwired into us is an evolutionary predilection to punish the other, even if the thing that divides us is arbitrary, even if the thing that divides us is false. We are willing to lose something ourselves if, in the process, we widen the gap between our team and theirs. But what a relief. That was only adolescent schoolboys. Surely grown-ups have matured beyond such silliness. Surely grown-ups wouldn't do that. But turns out, no. This experiment has been duplicated across age groups, across countries, across cultures. It's in our brains. Watch yourself watching the news. You'll see it. It's there. The other team might be suggesting a policy that could be good for us and for them. But we don't judge the policy on the basis of merit. We like to think we do, but we don't. First, we find out what our team thinks. And then we decide if it's a good policy or a bad policy. And we do that even if the policy would be better for everyone, because some part of us in there will be damned if we're going to let them get a win. We'd rather suffer bad policy or no policy before we will let them do better. It's in us. And it especially flares up, we've been seeing, when our brains are triggered by threat or triggered by fear. Now, thank God that's not the only architecture that's inside of us. It's in there. And when history invites us to give birth to a bigger version of us, when history invites us to put real-life texture to the vague notion of oneness that is not sameness, that tendency is there. It is inside of us, and it fights us every step of the way. We see it in our leaders. They'll be damned if they're going to give the other team a win, even if it would be good for the nation. We see it in ourselves. We even see it in our church. It's in us. And it's also in them. It's in their brains, just like it's in our brains. And it resists us giving birth to our lofty aspirations, which is not a new thing under the sun. It's always been so. So fortunately for us, we have the wisdom of those who've gone before us, who went up against their own shadow sides and their most base instincts, their adversary ally brain structure, their most base selves. When they faced resistance to their aspirations, and when they discovered a way to emerge on the other side, better versions of themselves, they sent back to us a roadmap so that we could do better ourselves, so that we could create better lives and better homes and a better world. There is so much more inside of us than just our us versus them instincts. There is more inside of us than just our adversary ally evolutionary instincts. Now, we call that extra part the divine center. But that bothers some folks because it sounds so religious. And if it does, there are plenty of less religious sounding things to call it. But it is a good way to describe the tension that I've been calling birth pangs. We long to give birth to a new reality, to a bigger version of we. But when we do, we face these two competing forces: the deep longing for equality, the deep longing for fairness and mutual respect and inclusion for everyone. But we also have a deep resistance to letting the other side do better. A deep internal resistance that we have to face down if we want to give birth to the aspirations of this moment. So that's concrete. Jesus' teaching made it sound so abstract. But when it sounds abstract, we tend to apply it poorly. And when we do apply it poorly, Jesus' words end up sounding empty and trivial. Because here's what he said. He said, love yourself, love your neighbor, and even love your enemy. And that can sound like some rosy, syrupy greeting card kind of thing, but it's not. We are seeing in the very uncomfortable birth pangs of aspirations that to love the other is our only way out. And it is demanding. It requires false self-resisting. It requires brain instinct overcoming. It requires rise above-ing. And that is hard work. But it's also the only way that we are ever going to give birth to our aspirations. We love our neighbor with the same passion with which we love ourselves, and we grow and we are faithful with a little, and we can then do more. We can even love the other. That's why you hear me keep talking about our three-prong approach to be people of our time: service work, systems work, and spirituality work. To be people of our time who help move our little corner of the human experience forward, we stay engaged in our discomfort. We stay engaged in the wisdom and the practices of the spiritual tradition until they do in us what they will do in us, allowing us to become the kind of people who can effectively serve need when we see it, who can effectively change the systems that create that need in the first place. Because our evolutionary instincts are working against us all the time. And they're working against us giving birth to our aspirations all the time. So we work the circle. So we do the ancient practices. We do the communal practices. We do the contemplative practices. We do the learning practices. We do the serving practices. Basically, we do what you hear in the announcements every week. It is quite possible that we will come up to this moment of birth and we will back away. It is quite possible that we will find this kind of birth pang experience just too painful, too uncomfortable. It's possible we will back away. Like I said last week, the temptation is strong to find a nice comfy place to ride out the apocalypse and just avoid the whole thing. So consequently, it is possible this virus will come and go. This moment of economic pain will come and go. This moment of conflict and chaos will come and go. This Black Lives Matter moment, this Me Too moment, and we will back away. The invitation to give birth to our lofty aspirations might prove to be just too uncomfortable. But I am praying, and we are working together to insist of ourselves that we don't back away. I don't back away. You don't. Together, we don't. That's my prayer for us as we follow Jesus. Amen. Well, if you would please prepare your tithes and offerings, which is really mean, you can donate on our website. This week, if you're on our in our directory, you got Scott's financial report. He's cautiously optimistic. He says we're doing okay, but part of the reason we're doing okay is because some of our folks who usually give their whole year's giving in December gave it in advance because they saw what was happening with the virus. So we don't know year-wise how we're doing, but for now, we're holding our own. And if you get to keep your job during this crisis, remember what I say all the time. Common Thread is a good place to invest your time and your energy and your love, and it's a good place to invest the dollars that it takes to be a healthy community. Giving on our website is easy and it's secure. You just click the donate button and you'll be able to follow the instructions easily. Okay, that being said, what are you thinking about? What is stirring up in your heart? And Gene, I'm hoping you have sent me a text. Sure enough. Let's see what y'all are saying. Oh, no. I just deleted it. No, here it is. Let me see. Let's go back to the top. Oh, wow. We get pictures this week. That's good. Let's see here. Dusty says, oh, that was last week. Sorry, Dusty. Ignore that. Now, Dusty says, the point of pain is not to get out of pain. The point of pain is to get out of pain what we need to get out of pain. Somebody wise once said that. Gene says, but let's see. Tribal belonging requires other tribes, but now belonging doesn't require the face-to-face interactions that it used to, so it is much easier to otherize people that we have no relationship with. That's true. And we are working really hard to be as connected as we can be across the barriers that keep us apart. We're trying. Man, it's hard to do when what we've got is online. Angela Scioli, also known as Angie, says, the arbitrary nature of this division reminds me that race is a socially constructed category. I think as we begin to learn, one of the things that the starting point of racial equity and racial awareness training is to realize the brain tricks that have played and the culturally created tricks that have been played in order to make race a division that seems real when, in fact, it is so arbitrary. It is just like those 64 schoolboys dividing up along false lines. Let's see. Dusty says, belonging is a drive that may not require othering, but othering does make it easy to our detriment. Okay. How are we doing on time, Gene? Oh, yeah, we got 5 minutes. So, looking at the camera? Oh, yeah, I'm going to look at the camera. I have to think first. I'm collecting myself here. Gene is working as our director these days, our producer these days. Doing a great job, by the way. But what I'm telling him is, shut up, leave me alone. Now I've forgotten. What was the thing? What was the thing that Dusty just said? Yeah. So here's one of the things that we purposely do. We make inclusion into the group really demanding. You've got to do some absurd things to be part of this group. You've got to pick up a rocket-propelled grenade launcher, and you've got to go down and march around downtown, and you've got to wear camouflage in order to be part of our group, which is absurd. But if you do that thing, here's what happens. We know that you, having done this absurd thing, are one of us. Ah, now we feel this heightened sense we belong together. So that's one example, but let's just move to the other side and look at an example. We do that in our religious settings as well. We're going to create this really absurd thing that you've got to believe or that you've got to do. And if you do this absurd thing, if you believe this absurd thing, if you go through these rituals and you do these practices that really most of us kind of scratch our heads and say, is this thing really? But if you do it, then I know you did that absurd thing, so you're here and you're here to stay. And now we belong together. Those are the kind of tricks that our brains will do to get us this primal need that we have of belonging with one another. And so we've got to be informed about what our heads do. Our heads will create any kind of arbitrary way. I gave this example one time ago. I knew a guy who worked in a recovery group, and he or in recovery, I guess, a therapeutic context, because in this inpatient setting, they were all working on morphine addiction or heroin addiction. And I don't know enough about heroin to know, but I guess at that time, back in the 80s, there were two kinds of heroin. There was cheap heroin and expensive heroin. Not the right language. But within the group, here are a bunch of folks addicted to heroin, and they create this hierarchy and this belonging context in which I became an addict to the good stuff. You became an addict to the bad stuff. I am therefore somehow different from you. We otherize one another. Our brains do that. And we don't just look down on heroin addicts who do that. Every one of us do that. And that is the thing over which we must triumph if we're going to give birth to our aspirations. The thing that is inside of us is always pulling at us from behind. This human nature thing, this evolutionary set of instincts that are inside of us, always holding us back. And so, the spiritual tradition. And so, the wisdom of the past. And so, the practices. And so, the things that we do so that we can get closer and closer to our aspirations and our actuality being the same. So, I can't even remember what you said, Dusty, but yeah, that's what I thought while you were talking. Let's see, Michael Walker says, this is a little bit off topic, but it's what this made me think. I typically viewed sports as an avenue for us to other people in a relatively harmless way. No one is more other to me than the Atlanta Falcons fans. But I wonder if it operates more like a pressure-releasing valve or if it actually reinforces our tendency to otherize even outside of sports. Well, I don't think that's off topic at all, Michael. I think that is kind of the key. Because here's what happens. We go and burn down our own cities, where we live, if there's a victory or if there's a loss, for this relatively arbitrary thing, some people who move a ball up and down a field or some people who throw a ball in a hoop. We get this thing, we get so attached to us trying to defeat them that we'll burn down the place. We'll burn our own city down. We'll turn over cars. We'll do that kind of stuff. It's not off topic at all because we look at that and we say, God, our brains do that. And the spiritual tradition keeps coming back again and again and says, our brains do that. We can do better. Our brains do that. There is an elevated way to live. And you got to know that the blood sport that we're seeing in our political place environment right now, the blood sport that we're seeing over vaccination or not vaccination, the blood sport that we're seeing over open, reopen, or don't reopen right now, it's all being driven by this fuel that the spiritual tradition says we can do better. And the way we do better is we learn this very demanding pathway. We love the neighbor, we love the enemy with the same passion with which we love ourselves. So, forewarned is forearmed. Once you know what your enemy is, and your enemy is your brain, we've met the enemy, it is us. Once you know that it's our brains that are working against us, here comes the spiritual tradition that says, I'm giving you gold, folks, gold on a silver platter. Do the practices, work the circle, and find your way forward into a more aspirational way of being. So, it's 11 o'clock. Thank you so much for joining. Glad you're here. If you would, please put your hand on your heart. And let's remember that we don't just have these brain instincts, but deep within us, we carry that extra thing. We call it the interior divine, which means there is within us love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness. There is within us the fruit of the divine. There is within us the capacity for selflessness and a bigger version of oneness. It's in us. And if you would, extend your other hand to the people who live with us in our city. Let's together look for opportunities this week to share what is in us with the people with whom we live and work, the people that we interact with, the people who together make up our city, looking for opportunities to heal and repair wherever we can. Amen. Well, God bless you. We are dismissed. Love one another, which means find somebody in the scroll, private message them, find out how they're doing, or it means get on the Zoom call and continue. What are you thinking? God bless you. We're dismissed. Love each other as you go. If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, We hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, commonthreadchurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page for your computer's browser, at the bottom of the page for your phones.